Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this episode, I want to talk about global fragmentation. Now, if you follow the channel, you'll know that I've said on a million occasions that the whole world is interconnected. And when something happens in one country, it has ramifications and a knock-on impact to all of the other countries in the world. And that's totally true. That's exactly the way the world works right now. However, the IMF have now released a report looking at what they call geoeconomic fragmentation, which is basically a situation whereby countries are no longer wanting to have that interconnectivity. And the reasons for that are multiple. It might be because of war or associated sanctions like we've seen following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, or it could be situations like Brexit, where the UK decided that it wanted to cut all of its ties with the EU and go it alone. So there are multiple reasons why this is happening. So in today's video, we'll go through that IMF report. We'll look at how the world did become interconnected following World War II, how everything started to work really efficiently. And then over the course of the last 20 years or so, we've started to see some cracks appearing in terms of those relationships. So we'll look at what's been happening with the supply chain, with the levels of trade, why there's discontent with regards to the relationship. And then we'll have a look at what the estimated impact of this fragmentation is likely to be on the global economy. Because as I've said before, it works best from an economic point of view if everybody works most efficiently. If you have specialists all across the world performing specialist functions, then that's the best way to operate. That's the cheapest and most efficient way. If you start breaking away from that model, then that's going to increase costs and going to put more pressure on the global economy. So we'll have a look at exactly what the forecast levels of GDP reduction might be as a result of all of this fragmentation. But before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below, where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And once again, I'd like to say thank you so much to everybody that has supported the channel. I really appreciate it. The International Monetary Fund was established in 1944 by 44 countries at that time, but now has 190 member states. And the IMF was established for a number of different reasons. Firstly, it was designed to provide support and assistance to all countries that needed it. Secondly, it provides a high level of research, so it follows what's going on in all of the economies around the world. It tracks GDP, debt levels, everything, and then provides a variety of research and data to help everybody with their analysis and policy-making decisions. And then thirdly, the IMF also provides loans for countries that need help. So you may well have seen videos that I've produced talking about the IMF providing a bailout facility. They, in many situations, are the lender of last resort. They're the people who step in when a country is going into collapse or crisis. And we've got those conversations going on right now with multiple countries. But as I mentioned, one of the biggest functions of the IMF is to provide research and data. And they recently produced this paper with the snappy title of Geoeconomic Fragmentation and the Future of Multilateralism. And as you'll know if you follow the channel, two of my pet hates are jargon and people using words that nobody else understands to try to make themselves look more intelligent. So I'll give you a quick breakdown of what this means. Geoeconomic basically means economics around the world, so basically the global economy. Fragmentation is obviously when you break something down. And multilateralism is simply an arrangement that involves three or more different countries. So essentially, this paper is looking at the current arrangements whereby multiple countries do things together and asking the question as to whether or not that system is going to break down and countries will start doing things on their own. And the introduction to this paper states, the global economy may be on the brink of a reversal of the steady increase in integration that characterized the second half of the 20th century. The shallow economic recovery in many regions following the global financial crisis between 2008 and 2010 coincided with a growing debate, especially in advanced economies, about the value of multilateralism and the unequal benefits of globalization. The increasing skepticism towards multilateralism contributed to the growing appeal of inward-looking policies, with policymakers becoming more receptive to erecting barriers between nations, including the areas of trade, capital, migration, and technology sharing. The United Kingdom's decision to leave the European Union in 2016 was an example of this broader trend. It was soon followed by a series of protectionist measures and countermeasures in trade between the world's two largest economies, the United States and China. The COVID-19 pandemic and increased geopolitical tensions have tested international relations and raised more questions about the benefits of global integration. Among other measures, national authorities responded to the pandemic by restricting the free movement of goods, most notably in the health sector, as well as the free movement of people via travel bans. While some of these measures, including certain travel restrictions, were appropriate to contain the virus during the initial phases, others, such as the restrictions on the export of key medical products, exacerbated the disruption of the pandemic and harmed trust in the benefits of an open trade system. Russia's invasion of Ukraine subsequently served to split countries along geopolitical lines and led to sanctions which have disrupted trade, tested the global financial architecture, and heightened tensions and uncertainty over the direction of globalization. While fragmentation may entail strategic advantages for some countries in selected cases, it is very likely to involve significant economic costs in the aggregate. The costs would include higher import prices, segmented markets, diminished access to technology and to both skilled and unskilled labour, and ultimately reduced productivity, which may result in lower living standards. Global economic fragmentation is likely to complicate multilateral cooperation in critical areas such as climate change mitigation and pandemic preparedness. This chart plots the history of globalization dating back to 1870 and shows the total amount of global imports and exports as a percentage of global GDP. The scale on the left-hand side is in percentages ranging from 0 to 60%, and an increasing percentage indicates an increase in globalization, i.e. more trade happening, more exports and imports as GDP increases. Now, the section on the left-hand side of this chart between 1870 and 1914 was known as the industrialization era. And this was a period when global trade was dominated by Argentina, Australia, Canada, Europe, and the United States, and was facilitated by the gold standard, and was largely driven by advances in transportation that lowered trade costs and boosted trade volumes. So you can see that at the start of this period in 1870, the percentage was sitting at around 28%, and over a 40-year period, there was a continued increase in global trade, which had hit around 40% prior to World War I. Now, the next section shown in red between 1914 and 1945 covers the period of World War I, which occurred between 1914 and 1918, the interwar period, and then World War II, which was from 1939 to 1945. Now, as you might expect, as the world was at war, this period represented a dramatic reversal of globalization due to the ongoing conflicts and the rise of protectionism. Despite the efforts of the League of Nations to try to foster multilateral cooperation between the wars, trade became regionalized as a result of the imposition of discriminatory trade barriers and the breakdown of the gold standard into currency blocks. The next period on this chart is between 1945 and 1980 and is referred to as the Bretton Woods era. Directly following the end of World War II, a number of international institutions, such as the IMF and the World Bank and the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, were established to try to promote multilateral relations between all of the countries in the world. The United States emerged as the dominant economic power, and the US dollar, which was pegged to gold initially, became the linchpin of an international system for currency exchange rates. Post-war recovery and trade liberalization led to the rapid expansion of Europe, Japan, and developing economies. Capital controls were gradually relaxed in many countries, but expansionary US fiscal and monetary policy, driven by the need to finance social and military spending, ultimately made the system unsustainable. And in 1974, the United States terminated the dollar-gold convertibility, and many countries switched to floating exchange rates. However, what you can see from this chart is that global trade started to be rebuilt during that period. At the end of the interwar years, the percentage of imports and exports was down to close to 10% of global GDP. However, by 1980, it was back up to around 30%, which is where we'd been back in 1870. Now, the next period on this chart is between 1980 and 2008 and is referred to as the liberalization era. During this period, we saw the removal of trade barriers in large emerging market economies, including China, and unprecedented levels of international economic cooperation, including the integration of the former Soviet bloc into the global economic system. Liberalization accounted for most of the increase in trade in this period, and the World Trade Organization, which was established in 1995, became the new multilateral institution overseeing trade agreements and facilitating negotiations and dispute settlement. And as you can see, during this 28-year period, the level of global trade increased from around 30% to more than 50%. Now, the final section on this chart is between 2008 and 2021 and has been labelled by the IMF as globalization. This is the period following the global financial crisis in 2008 when we had a deep global recession. and has been characterized by the slower expansion of cross-border lending and trade. And as you can see during this period, global trade has plateaued. So we haven't seen global trade increasing at the same rate as it did in the previous 28 years. This chart shows the global flow of goods, services, and finance dating back to 1980. The scale on the left-hand side is measured in trillions of dollars. The green section at the bottom of the bar chart represents goods, the red section is services, and the yellow section is finance. So what this chart shows is that there's been an enormous increase in the level of global trade over the course of the 40 years plotted here. Back in 1980, global trade was sitting at around $2 trillion. The level of trade increased slowly in the 1980s and was up to around $5 trillion by 1990. We then started to see an increase in the level of trade as both the former Soviet Union and China entered the global economy. And by 2000, global trade was above $10 trillion. However, the period between 2000 and 2007 saw the most rapid increase in global trade. And in 2007, prior to the global financial crisis, global trade levels had got up to around $35 trillion. And interestingly, you can see from the bar chart that the section that grew the most was finance during that period. There were a lot of complicated debt products put together in the early 2000s, all of which came home to roost as part of the global financial crisis. We saw instruments such as collateralized debt obligations, loan obligations collapsing because they'd taken on far too much leverage. And as a result of the global financial crisis, the level of trade did drop down for a few years. Between 2010 and 2014, we saw a return to growth. There was a slight dip in 2015 and 2016 as the global economy slowed down. However, over the last few years, we've seen a return to an increase in global trade levels. And I think one thing that's interesting to note about the chart for 2020 is the large yellow section at the top, which shows that we've now seen a further increase in finance products, which indicates potential risk if we are going into a global slowdown in 2023. This chart, which shows selected commodities, shows how highly concentrated the supply of certain things have become all across the world. So this chart has been split into different categories representing valuable commodities. So starting at the top and going clockwise, we've got cobalt, natural gas, rare earth metals, lithium, oil, nickel, graphite, and then in the centre, we've got platinum and copper. And the way that the IMF have colour coordinated this, they've denoted China in grey and countries that are currently sanctioned in black. So to start off with, if we look at the supply of natural gas, you can see that Russia, which is shown in black here, represents one of the world's largest suppliers, as does Iran. However, there are a variety of other countries, including the United States. And the situation is similar for oil, which is shown in pink at the bottom of this chart. Russia is a significant supplier, but we've got a variety of other countries, including the United States and Saudi Arabia. And of course, we've got other sanctioned countries, such as Venezuela and Iran. However, I think what this chart really does highlight is that there are some commodities where certain countries almost have a monopolistic position, and that represents a problem for the rest of the world if they need those commodities. So cobalt is a good example of this, and cobalt is used in a variety of different industrial applications, but predominantly is used in the production of lithium-ion batteries. And you can see that the world's largest supplier of cobalt is the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has sanctions applied against it. Now, there are some other countries, including Australia, that do have cobalt reserves, but the vast majority of the global reserves are in a country that is currently sanctioned. And similarly, if we look at graphite, which is being talked about as being potentially a revolutionary material in the future, the vast majority of the world's reserves are located in China, and the situation is exactly the same for rare earth metals. And these global monopolies are one of the reasons why we're starting to see fragmentation, because some of these countries are deciding that they want to keep these resources to themselves rather than selling them to everybody else. This chart shows the developments in global trade between 1991 and 2021. The blue section at the bottom represents trade between advanced economies. The dark green section above it represents trade between advanced economies and emerging and developing economies. The medium green section above that represents trade between China and advanced economies. The light green section above that represents the trade between China and emerging and developing economies. And the section at the top is other trade. And the scale on the left-hand side of this chart is between 0 and 100%. So what we can see here is that over the last 30 years, there has been a true opening up of global trade. Back in 1991, around two-thirds of all global trade was being done between advanced economies. So that represented the majority of trade at that time. The position by 2021 had turned entirely on its head. Trade between advanced economies represented around 40%, which means that the majority of trade, around 60%, involved emerging and developing economies and China. And over the last 30 years, the level of trade that has grown the most is the trade with China. And in terms of the actual growth rates, the amount of trade between advanced economies increased 4 times between 1991 and 2021. Trade between the advanced economies and emerging and developing economies increased 7 times. Trade between the advanced economies and China increased 31 times. And trade between China and emerging and developing economies increased by a whopping 131 times. This chart shows the movement in geopolitical risk, military conflicts, and trade policy uncertainty between 1995 and 2021. And we've got two scales here, both of which are an index. The red line represents the Trade Policy Uncertainty Index, and the green line represents Geopolitical Risk Index. And both are measured against a starting point of 100 in 1995. The grey bar chart of this graph is the International Military Conflict Index, and is measured on the right-hand side with a starting point of 100 in 1995. So if we start off by looking at the military conflicts, you can see that there has been a dramatic increase between 1995 and 2021 in the index. It's increased by almost 10 times over the period. And this is as a result of all the military conflicts over the last 30 years and doesn't actually include Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which started in February 2022. So if we did include that, then this scale would be even higher. Now, partially as a result of that, the geopolitical risk index has also increased over the last 30 years. And you can see a pronounced spike in November 2021, which represents the concern that was starting to occur all across the world as Russia started to build troops on Ukraine's border towards the end of 2021. And if we then look at the red line, which represents the trade policy uncertainty index, you can see that over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, that has increased dramatically. We've seen it increase from 100 at the start of this period to more than 700 at certain periods in 2018 and 2019. And this chart shows the number of trade restrictions imposed dating back to 2009. And the split here is goods at the bottom in green, investment in red, and services in yellow. And what this chart clearly shows is that there's been a marked increase in the number of trade restrictions over the course of the last 5 years. And this period correlates entirely to what we just saw in the previous chart for the increased number of military conflicts and the increase in the Trade Policy Uncertainty Index. And you can see that the biggest single increase in terms of trade restrictions represents goods. So this is actually the physical purchase and movement of various imports and exports. And as we mentioned at the start of the video, this is where it starts having an impact on the global economy. Because if you can't buy the essential goods and services that you'd previously been buying from certain countries, then you need to either find new suppliers or different ways of doing things. And that's exactly what's happened during 2022. If you follow the channel, you'll be perfectly aware that Europe has been changing its buying structure to try to stop buying energy products directly from Russia. So it's trying to stop buying natural gas and oil and anything else that it was purchasing. And as a result of that, we've seen a big increase in prices. Firstly, the global price of oil and natural gas rose. But secondly, it's more expensive to purchase it from other suppliers. In the case of natural gas, Europe is actually having to buy liquefied natural gas because nobody else can supply the pipelines. And as a result of that, it's having to invest tens of billions into new infrastructure. So all of this is adding to global inflation. So you can start seeing how fragmentation has a direct impact onto the economy because it's more expensive. This chart estimates the global long-term losses as a percentage of global GDP from global fragmentation. And the scale on the left-hand side is the percentage loss of GDP ranging from 0 to 14%. And we've got four sets of bar charts here because these estimates have been put together by four different groups of economists, all of whom have different views as to what they think the impact will be. And the red bars on this chart represent the lower estimates, so the best case scenario, and the green bars represent the worst case scenario. So you can see that the first set of estimates on the left-hand side here are the most conservative and estimate that the impact on global GDP will be between 1 and 1.5%. The second group of economists have an estimate between 1% and 7% negative impact. The third group of economists believe the range is between 4.5% and 8.5%. And the final group of economists are estimating that the impact will be between 2% and 12%. Now, obviously, there's a very large spread here between 1% on the best case scenario and 12% on the worst case. And we've also got two different cases, the upside case and the downside case. But if you're taking an average from these four sets of estimates, it's going to be somewhere in the region of 5 to 7% impact on global GDP, which is a material impact. And one of the problems we have right now is that we're on the precipice of a global recession. And if this fragmentation is actually going to make things worse, then we could see that recession becoming much worse than expected. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because, as you know, I'm always trying to share as much data and information with everybody who watches the channel. And the IMF produces a lot of really useful information. And what they've come up with today is this concept of fragmentation. Now, I've spoken a lot about the integration of the world and the fact that everybody's working together. And that's really the best way forward. But unfortunately, that's not going to be reality for the next 5 to 10 years. As a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a lot of countries have broken their relationship with Russia. They will never deal with them again. And as a result of that, we're seeing the global supply chain and the way the trade is working changing all the time. Europe is having to buy liquefied natural gas, and it's having to buy things that it was previously buying from Russia from everywhere else. And as a result of that, prices are going up. There's a lot more demand. And those countries who are now selling into Europe won't be able to supply the countries that they were previously supplying. And as a result of that, we may find that Russia is trying to change its relationships and trying to sell more product into Asia and other parts of the world. So we're seeing a real sea shift in the way that the trade is working all across the world. And unfortunately, it's likely as a result of that, that prices will start going up. And we've already seen that in 2022. We saw the price of oil, natural gas, wheat, and a variety of other commodities spiking. They have come back down, but they're likely to settle at a higher level than they were historically. The reason that Europe was buying oil and gas from Russia is because Russia's close to Europe geographically. It's easy to buy it. Russia built a whole load of pipelines supplying oil and gas, and that meant that they had the cheapest form of delivery because obviously it's easier to send something down a pipeline directly to your power station rather than having to load it onto a ship, move it across the water, and then unload it at the other end and then transport it to wherever it needs to be. That's going to add more cost and logistics, and that's what's happening right now. And the IMF in this report has highlighted the fact that since 2008, since the global financial crisis, the level of globalization has stopped increasing. It's actually plateaued. And that's as a result of a breakdown of relationships for a number of reasons. It might be war-driven, which is what we've seen as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Or it could be for political reasons, such as the UK's decision to leave Europe as part of the Brexit negotiations. Now, one of the problems with fragmentation is that it can become contagious. After the UK announced that it was leaving Europe, a lot of other countries were under political pressure to change their ruling parties, and there was the rise of the right-wing element. A lot of countries wanted to go nationalist again, to leave the collective agreement. Now, nobody else has actually followed suit yet, but there is a possibility that other countries could decide that they want to leave the EU. And as we go into an economic downturn, those pressures start to rise because people become unhappy and they blame certain relationships for where they are right now. So there is a likelihood that going forward, we could see more fragmentation. And obviously, if we see more military conflicts appearing all across the globe, then that could lead to further problems. So one of the situations that we looked at in 2022 was the growing tension between China and Taiwan. Taiwan is not recognized by China as an independent country, and Taiwan has trading relationships with a lot of countries in the West. And we've seen China undertaking military exercises, flypasts, and all the rest of it. So there is a possibility that something could arise at some point during 2023 as a result of that tension. But whatever the reason, the IMF has identified that fragmentation is likely to increase over the course of the next few years, and the direct result of that will be a reduction in global GDP. And their estimate is quite a big range. It's between 1% and 12%. And we don't know the exact timing of when this is going to kick in. But the bottom line here is that the globe will become less efficient, it will become more expensive, and fragmentation will lead to a reduction in global GDP. If that happens during 2023, then it could accelerate the global slowdown, the global recession that is potentially coming, and could make things worse. So as I said, I wanted to share this information because it's always good to be in the know, to have as much knowledge and data as possible. So hopefully you found today's episode useful, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.